Here we are together. Beloved ones of God. I'd like to start with an invocation that in the lineage I'm a part of, we say at the beginning of our meetings. So if you know it, please say it with me. And if you don't know it, just listen with your heart. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So we say, toward the One, toward the One. I'd like to tell you just a little about two of the teachers in the lineage that I'm representing here today. And the first is Hazrat Inayat Khan. Perhaps many of you, most of you perhaps have heard of him, but he came from India in 1910 to the West, to Europe and the United States. And this invocation we just said was from him. And if you know what Europe and if you imagine, remember what Europe and the United States were like at that time, the world was much bigger then. You know? The West was the West. America was this new land, you know. And the East was something, you know, really quite other. And for this Indian man to come here, he came with, he felt, a message. But he knew that this message was not personal to him and not personal to any particular time. It is something that we all know, which is what is behind the appearance of, come in, anyone who's waiting to come in, have them come in. What is behind what we call religion, or what is behind what we call these different streams of Sufism or Buddhism. So I have a little something to read to you from him, just for a taste of his presence, perhaps. And please, if I'm talking or reading, you know, this isn't, you know by now, your minds are probably long gone, I hope so. But if not, if you're trying to get something with your mind, you know, consider just allowing yourself to rest in the heart and listen with your heart, not your, you know, it's not about this stuff. This, he gave talks, and people transcribed those talks. Sounds familiar, right? The ideal of the Sufi. Sufism has never in any period of history been a religion or a certain creed. It has always been considered as the essence of every religion and of all religions. Thus, when it was given to the world of Islam, it was presented by the great Sufis in Muslim terminology. Whenever the Sufi ideal was presented to a certain people, it was presented in such a way as to make it intelligible to those people. How can the Sufi idea be made intelligible? Truth is that which can never be spoken in words. And that which can be spoken in words is not the truth. The ocean is the ocean. The ocean is not a few drops of water that one puts into a bottle. Just so, truth cannot be limited by words. Truth must be experienced. For it is natural that the knowledge of truth should come sooner or later. What a nice thing for us to know personally. It is natural for the truth to come sooner or later. What the Sufi strives for is self-realization, and one arrives at this self-realization by means of one's divine ideal, one's God. By this, one touches that truth which is the ultimate goal and the yearning of every soul. It is not only realization, it is a happiness which words cannot explain. It is that peace which is yearned for by every soul. And how does one attain to it? By practicing the presence of God. By realizing the oneness of the whole being. By continually holding every moment of the day, consciously or subconsciously, the truth before one's vision, in spite of the waves of illusion which arise incessantly, diverting the glance from the absolute truth. And no matter what may be the name of any sect, cult, or creed, and I will add of any lineage, so long as the souls are striving toward that object, to a Sufi, they are all Sufis. The attitude of the Sufi to all the different religions is one of respect. The Sufi's religion is the service of humanity, and the Sufi's only attainment is the realization of truth. So, as usual, I thought I had a hint of what I was going to talk about or what this was going to be like, and then I got a different hint this morning at breakfast. One of my friends, in a conversation where I was having trouble remembering things, which often happens, and maybe it's getting older or something else, I don't know, but... my name is Zakira, and the meaning of the word Zakir, or Zakira, is she who remembers God. So the word remembrance, remembrance, to remember. But what my friend said to me this morning was, oh, you're here to help people forget. Oh, what? Help people forget. And then I remembered this story. Some of you have heard this story, perhaps. It's, there was, I do remember it. I'm just, it's a hint of something very important, actually. So once there was a young man who was the son of the king. And the king gave him an assignment. He had to go to a faraway land. And there was one thing that he had to do, just one thing. So he starts on this journey, and it's a very long journey to this faraway land. And sometimes it's very difficult, and sometimes it's quite joyful, and sometimes disasters happen, and the road isn't particular. The journey there doesn't go in a straight line, actually. And along the way, he meets his partner, and he gets married, and has children, and he settles down and lives in the village and works as a farmer, and the crops are raised, and he and his wife get old, and the children grow up, and the children get married, and there's grandchildren, and all this time, he'd forgotten the one thing. The one thing. So perhaps there's only one thing that each of us has to remember in this life. And if we remember everything else, but we forget this one thing, perhaps we've missed the opportunity that this life gives us. But if we can remember this one thing, just this one thing, we can forget everything else. So, how do we remember? So I'd like to introduce you to someone else. A person that I consider my Sufi teacher, although I actually met him initially in the form of his disciples, and then I met him in a dream that same day. And his name is Samuel Lewis, and he's considered to be the first American-born Sufi. He was born just before the turn of the century. He was a student of Hazrat Inayat Khan. He was also a student of Nogen Senzaki, one of the first Japanese Buddhist teachers to come to this country. He actually introduced Nogen Senzaki and Hazrat Inayat Khan to each other, and that's a beautiful story. Perhaps another day I'll read the story that Nogen Senzaki wrote of their meeting in San Francisco. But Sam was born a mystic, and again, in a time into a family where that was not understood. A familiar story, perhaps, to some of us. And his entire life was spent living in this remembrance. He studied with many different teachers who were here in the United States, in San Francisco. He lived in San Francisco. And he worked. He was a laborer. He worked. He planted. He worked on the highway crews. He was a gardener. He did the highway plantings. He worked as a gardener in Golden Gate Park. It wasn't until the early 1950s that he received a small inheritance and was able to travel outside of the United States. And he went to Japan, and in Japan met with many Buddhist teachers and was recognized as a teacher himself. He went to Pakistan, Egypt, India, met many Sufi teachers, also met Papa Ram Dass at Ananda Ashram, a Hindu teacher that he loved very much. And Papa Ram Dass, he met him first here, Papa Ram Dass. He had a dream that Papa Ram Dass was of this person, and then a year later, Papa Ram Dass came to San Francisco and they met. I say here, I mean this continent, somewhere here. And it wasn't until really the mid 1960s that he had more than a handful of students, and that's when God told him that he was to be the spiritual teacher of the hippies. He didn't do it; they picked him. He didn't go out and do anything about that. And he, in the next few years, was a very fertile time, where he had before his death in 1971. He had 100 students, and he had introduced the dances of universal peace, which are now done all over the world, and new dances are coming all of the time. But that, you know, we attribute, you know, this most recent version of this celebration to him. He really lived the Sufi ideal of one who is at home everywhere, who could go into any temple or mosque or zendo and be at home, and find his family of beloved ones. He was a lot of other things too, and in preparation for coming here, I started just sort of diving into a lot of writings, and about a week ago, I pulled out, he's a very prolific writer, but he was always letters to people. He didn't write for himself so much, but so his what he called his diary was his letters that he would write to people all over the world, politicians, business people, people that he was associated with, the Sufis. I mean, Art Hoppe, the San Francisco Chronicle columnist that he would write to regularly. And this was his diary, so he would talk about his activities. So I started reading one night, and I just got engaged in this, and I just read for hours, and it was just sort of one thing after, and I thought, how am I going to do this? How can I possibly, how could I say you know, what he was about. And I had a dream then that there were a group of us sitting together, and each one of us had one sentence. One sentence. Each one of us had one sentence from him. And we each had that sentence, and we knew that sentence, but it was too big. We couldn't put it all together. So I'll just read you a little bit of his words, and then we'll do, I'd like to do a practice, one of the practices that we learned from him. This is an excerpt from a book, The Lotus and the Universe. And he's writing about peace. According to the Sufi view, and perhaps this covers all mystics, one must find the peace within, and by the power gained thereby, radiate one's atmosphere. Thus, there is an explanation of Allahu Akbar, that not only is there no power nor might save in Allah, but that in peace there is power. This age, bent on excitement, no longer recognizes the small print of Newton that everybody remains in a state of rest, or, nor can it be compelled to accept the words of Jesus Christ in the Gospel of Thomas. The sign of the Father is an activity and a rest. The theme here is universal. There is a world of agitation, and beneath it, a world of rest. Or perhaps they are so intermingled that the universe is a razor's edge. Indeed, we find this in and under all religions. Yet it is also true, as one Oriental sage put it, I have come to abolish religion and to bring God. Doesn't that sound like Sam? I've come to abolish religion and bring God. Until we find the depths, we are concerned only with words or thoughts. These proceed from peace. Peace is their origin. It is not affected by them. The greatest lesson received from Nogen Senzaki was his Buddha Hidaira, Buddha heart. It was not only the words, but something conveyed with them, or has been put in this age, let the mind go, let the heart come. Let the mind go, let the heart come. We again come back to the need to cultivate peace within ourselves, however so it be done. Peace cannot come from a pact. We must alter foreign aid into foreign understanding without changing policies. Changing policies may bring satisfaction, but not peace. Changing attitudes might be tried. Without any of the credentials of the scholar, the writer has communed with the trees in the Imperial Gardens in Tokyo as a guest of honor. Without any of the credentials of the diplomat, the writer has communed with the President of India. All this besides meeting the sages and saints and holy men of many faiths, in each case, one became aware of the grand oceans of stillness in which we live and move and have our being. Hazara Nayak Khan taught, O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and of earth, open our hearts, that we may hear thy voice, which constantly comes from within. In other words, God is here. This can be practiced. This can be realized. This can be known. My love and blessings to you all. Om Mani Padme Hum. Hail the jewel in the lotus. Samuel L. Lewis, Sufi Ahmed Murad Chisti. So I'd like to do a practice that involves moving and walking. And then we'll come back. So if everyone would stand up. Okay, are we live again? Yeah, a little bit louder. We have a request to repeat the words, the sounds for someone, so I'm happy to do that. So the walks that we've done, and also since this is being recorded, I'll just be able to say them now for the tape as well. So the walks that we did, each phrase, the first ones, the phrases all start with Ya Rahman, compassion, Ya Rahim, mercy, Ya Malik, the king. Ya Jamil, beauty. Allahu Akbar, peace is power. Ya Hayo, Ya Qayyum, the ever-living, the eternal, or the ever-living, the self-subsisting. Okay. So, someone has a question. Sometimes it's helpful for me to know what the question is. Sometimes it's not, but you know, this is an opportunity. If you have a question about something, it gives me an opportunity to know what's sort of in the room.
The difference between talking and saying it loud
That's a good, that's something that one can experiment with. So you can try that yourself and see what that feels like. If you're taking a walk on the downtown mall like I do, obviously I'm not doing it out loud. Yeah, yeah. And remember, the first walk that we did was with the phrase, toward the one. You know, that's, you can always do that. I mean, that's just really quite, yeah. And silently, you know. Or you can do it out loud, but we did it silently. So, yeah, you can find out for yourself. You're the laboratory, you know? Okay. We'll do a little, no, I'll read something first, and then we'll do a little something else. You know, for me, a conference is a little different because it means people get up and talk and the other people sit, you know, and that's kind of different than my background is more experiential. When we come together, either we don't talk at all. That's one thing that Sherry and I do together. We do meditation retreats together, and we do almost no talking. Or when we come together, what we call our camps, we come together and we do lots of dances, and we do lots of zikr, and we do walks, and maybe Alauddin will come and we'll do some music, or Jalaluddin Loris will come and we'll all do the turn with him, or you know, so this is conference with people up front talking is a different experience for me. So I like to just make this experiential. as we can as a complement, because I think we all get different things from different time, you know, from different people and different ways of being, different ways of doing. But I want to say this because Llewellyn said something last night and I have forgotten to tell him. I think it was Llewellyn who said, didn't he say, I hate to tell you, there's no such thing as enlightenment? Or was that Andrew? I get them so. Does anybody remember someone saying, I hate to tell you, last night? He said it, he didn't say it last night? But I remembered something from Buddhism. There is no enlightenment because there is no person to be enlightened. There is enlightened action, enlightened being, not person. You know, it's like a little hint there about something, you know? Well, now I said it. Rumi has been a favorite poet of mine for a long time. And I love to read Rumi out loud, but you know, so many other people now read Rumi out loud. I don't like to be in competition. So I'm gonna. I like to, for those of you who haven't met Hafiz, I like to read a little Hafiz. Yeah, I know. another Hafiz lover here. And for those of you who haven't met Hafiz, he's being translated in English. In the same way that Coleman Barks worked with Rumi, this fellow's, the translator's name is Dan Ladinsky, and he's really made these poems alive for now. And Hafiz was 12th century Persian, still very, very loved in Iran. And he really, during his lifetime, really fell in and out of favor because as a true Sufi, you know, he didn't really quite fit, you know, and he would talk about God in ways that were not the orthodox ways to speak of God. So, you know, sometimes he was in, sometimes he was out, sometimes he was back in again, but he, you know, his words to this day are really very loved. Hazrat Inayat Khan knew Hafiz and spoke about him. He gave a series of talks at one point on different poets. This lovely little book, The Hand of Poetry, has some essays about the different poets from what he talked about them. And then, actually, in this case, it's Coleman did the worked the verses. So let's see what Hazrat Inayat Khan said. Very often, religious belief in God and in the hereafter has kept man sleeping, waiting for that hour and that day to come when he will be face to face with his Lord, and he is certain that that day will not come before he is dead. And therefore, he awaits his death in the hope that in the hereafter he will see God, for heaven alone is the place where God is to be found. There is no other place where God will be found, and that there is only a certain place, which is a sacred place of worship, that is the church, and that anywhere else God was not to be found. The mission of Hafiz was to take away this idea and to make one conscious of the heaven by one's side, and to tell man that all he expects in the hereafter as a reward could be had here if he lived a fuller life. The whole trend of the poetry of Hafiz is to awaken that appreciation of beauty and love of beauty, which is the only condition through which to experience that bliss for which our life is purposed. Someone asked a Sufi the reason for this whole creation, and he answered, God, whose being is love itself, had desire to experience the nature of his own being, and in order to experience it, he had to manifest himself. Man likes complexity. He does not want to take one step It is more interesting to look forward to millions of steps. The man who is seeking the truth gets into a puzzle, and that puzzle interests him. I'm sure this doesn't apply to anyone here. He wants to go through that puzzle 1,000 times more. Just like children, their whole interest is in running around. They do not want to see the door and go out. And until they are very tired, and so with grown-up people. This is why the mystics made the greatest truths a mystery, to be given to the few who are ready for it, and to let the others play, because it is the time for them to play. As the love principle, according to the idea of the Sufis, and according to the idea of all the prophets and knowers who have ever come to this world, is the first principle, that is, the love principle, so it is the last principle. You know, we can read about Hafiz, but we can just read Hafiz, even if it is an icon. You know, I think when someone's giving a talk, you know, your mind kind of follows along, but with poetry, something else can happen, you know? It doesn't follow a place to follow. So it's like rain dropping down. Huh. These are really outrageous. The real love I always keep a secret. All my words are sung outside her window, for when she lets me in, I take 1,000 oaths of silence. But then she says, oh, then God says, what the hell, Hafiz? Why not give the whole world my address? Sometimes I start crying and I can't finish, so if that happens, don't worry. I'll try not to worry. I do not want to step so quickly over a beautiful line in God's palm as I move through the earth's marketplace today. I do not want to touch any object in this world without my eyes testifying to the truth that everything is my beloved. Something has happened to my understanding of existence that now makes my heart always full of wonder and kindness. I do not want to step so quickly over this sacred place on God's body that is right beneath your own foot as I dance with precious life today. I want both of us to start talking about this great love as if you and I and the sun were all married and living in a tiny room, helping each other to cook, do the wash, weave and sew, care for our beautiful animals. We all leave each morning to labor on the earth's field. No one does not lift a heavy pack. I want both of us to start singing like two traveling minstrels about this extraordinary existence we share, as if you and I and God were all married and living in a tiny room. Friends do things like this. Friends do things like this. Tell which mat their house key is hidden under. Hafiz, jump over, cut right through all the small talk today. Look beneath the right-hand corner of that Kirman rug behind the barn, where my sweet dog is usually sleeping. Don't worry, she won't bite. For you would not believe the extraordinary view of God from my bedroom window. Okay, one more. If God invited you to a party, if God invited you to a party and said, everyone in the ballroom tonight will be my special guest, how would you then treat them when they arrived? Indeed, indeed. And Hafiz knows there is no one in this world who is not upon his jeweled dance floor. So let's dance with a little sound. I don't want to call this singing because some people think they can't sing. So this isn't singing. It's just about making a sound. And we'll start by just doing the sound ah, or you can put an S in front of it so it's saw. There's two instructions. Open your mouth and open your mouth wider. And just let the sound come out. It's relaxed, but don't be afraid to open your mouth. Say the first part. Ishq Allah.
Ishq Allah.
Good. Ma'bud Lila.
Ma'bud Lila.
God is love. God is the lover. And God is the beloved. Okay? You'll catch it. gone through.